Let's go to Revelation chapter 12. John's combing his hair. You remind me to comb mine. We're going to spend a little bit more time on this idea of zero. Chapter 12, verse 7. And there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into, can everybody say into? Into the earth. And his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven. Now, the operative phrase here is, if you believe this, is that old serpent, the devil, and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. You got to hear that. In other places it says, the whole world lieth in deception. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. Where is he cast? He's cast out into the earth. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. The testimony there does not mean I used to be bad and now Jesus has made me good. The word testimony comes from the word for martyr. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, which is their new blood, and by the word of their testimony. The word of their testimony is they have died to themselves. And they love not their lives unto death. Love is a verb there. It means they gave breath not to their lives. They gave importance not to their lives, even unto death. They were not a debtor to any aspect of their life. Not a debtor to their emotions, not a debtor to their feelings, not a debtor to their confusion, not a debtor to anything. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. If he hadn't been cast out into the earth, therefore every man is the instead of Christ, then they couldn't have overcome him by the blood of the Lamb or the word of their testimony. If he did, that would have just been a philosophy. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and ye that dwell in them. That's why it's critical that you understand that you are no longer dwelling in the earth. You are dwelling on the mercy seat. That's your place of permanent residence. You are on the mercy seat, under the wings of the cherubim. That place under the wings of the cherubim, sitting on the mercy seat, is called the oracle of God. If you get off the mercy seat and go play in the darkness, then the Holy Spirit has to become your enemy to drive you back onto the mercy seat by the abandonment of self, by the word again of your testimony, so that you love not your life unto death. Is everybody clear on that? But listen to the next one. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth. If you have left the mercy seat and returned to the kingdom of darkness, then woe unto you. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, knowing, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. Now just go down a couple verses to verse 13, chapter 13. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea. And I believe he saw himself. He saw you. He saw me. He saw all men. Having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Every one of those seven heads is one of the seven mountains, the high places in your mind. And the whore of Babylon is clothed in scarlet, sitting on those seven heads. And each one of those heads has ten horns, or ten crowns, making up the Sanhedrin of your mind. You got it a little bit? Upon his heads, all the heads, the name of blasphemy. The word blasphemy is a technical word in the law. And it means one who denied the foundation. And the way the blasphemy is manifested is because each one of those heads, each one of those voices in all of those heads is capable only of blasphemy. Therefore, the only defense against the blasphemy is it is finished. And not one single thought that has blasphemy as its predicate can withstand. All thoughts have blasphemy as their predicate because they come from the source of blasphemy. He was a liar from the beginning and he still is a liar. So every voice from each one of those tongues in your head can only, it's impossible for it to do anything other than blaspheme. Deny the foundation. So you bring every thought and every imagination into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and that obedience of Christ says it is finished. Now, the way that he has deceived you is that you have a need, there is some such thing as zero, or that you have time. If you can hear this morning, you never have to walk in deception again. Now, that's why Jesus said of his disciples, they know his voice and they will not follow another. Because any voice, anything that tells you something that's dependent on time or has need as the predicate, and need is the mother of invention or the mother of ideas, perceived need, is a lie. And I don't care what anybody else in the universe says. You can believe this. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. A great control. That's what you want. You want control of your life. And we've gone through this many times, I'm not going to do it this morning, how the leopard, the bear, the lion, and the dragon are all manifested in you. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly head wound was healed, or apparently healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. The only possibility, if you conceive of this, for all the world to wonder after the beast from the day of Christ until today is all the world is wondering after themselves. The wonder of self. the possibility thinking, the imaginations that take you. Anybody have any response? Anybody believe me?
Think about the seven mountains, seven high places, and I guess those are like one predominant in each one of us, or are they all predominant? They all have their place.
One may have dominance at any given time, but they're all equal players. But only one of the heads was raised from the deadly head wound. And that's you. Your you-ness. If Jesus Christ was the last Adam, if the love of Christ constraineth us, for we thus judge it, if one died for all, then all are dead. If he was the last Adam, who are you? Well, it's obvious who you are. The instead of Christ in his temple. And I don't care how religious you get, we'll see that in a minute. Well, let's just go there real quick. Go to verse 11. And he's still standing there looking, and he says, "Behold, I beheld another beast coming out of the earth. And he had two horns, like a lamb. And he spake as a dragon. He exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed." The whole idea of now the beast has got two horns like a lamb, because he's become religious, but he's now just a religious beast, but he's still speaking with the voice of the dragon. Because it's all about self-seeking. I'll go back to the beginning here. "And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly head wound was healed." His deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Here we go again. He deceiveth the whole world, and now all the world is wondering after themselves. Nobody has any? Nobody wants to have a discussion? What?
I love it how you like to fight.
It's not fighting.
Something like this.
No, I just want you to say what's there.
Well, I know I don't want to hear this because I'm trying to listen to it through the ears of the people other than myself.
Okay, let's go to 2 Thessalonians. Chapter 2.
Wait a minute, I don't know where it is.
It's back to the left a few pages. Second Thessalonians.
You see movies and read books and stuff, and the wacko character is hearing voices. Wow, what a wacko. But it doesn't seem crazy when the voice that you're hearing is your own voice. You know, I mean, if I heard Pete talking in my head, I'd be concerned. But what I hear is me. What I hear is me talking. What I think is me. And that's so we commonly call thinking.
"Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming," or again, coming is the word parousa. And a better meaning for coming, I mean, it means the coming, because he's coming to meet us in the air, and as we rise up to meet him in the air, we're going to look back, and all. If you do look back, you'll see the universe on fire. But it means present. He's saying here, "I beseech you, brethren, I beg of you, by the presence of Christ in you, I beg of you, I beseech you,
excuse me, now that parousa, that presence, that's what we're talking about, is where either need and or time denies.
Right. Parousa can't have need and doesn't know time because he is eternal.
And the parousa is a given fact. We're the
the lie.
The crazy people who are saying, no, there's not a giant elephant in front of me.
No, we're saying he's coming someday. Remember, the instead of Christ will always confess that he did come in the flesh and that he will come. But it's only the Spirit of God that can confess he is come.
So in reality, we're a bunch of blind, crazy liars making believe that Messiah isn't here.
Let's just see what Jesus said about it real quick. You can go to John 8 if you want, but just keep your hand in Thessalonians, you won't mind. And he's talking to the disciples who believed on him, the Jews who believed on him. And he said, if the Son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed, in verse 36. I know that you are Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me, because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and you do that which you have seen with your father. He's starting to piss him off. And they answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. And Jesus saith unto them, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. Thus did not Abraham. You do the deeds of your father. Then they said unto him, we be not of fornication. We have one father, even God. And Jesus said unto them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Even because you cannot hear my word. You are of your father, the devil. And the lust of your father you will do. It's in Greek it says, is all you're capable of willing to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own. For he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. And it goes on and on. So Jesus said the worst thing you could say. And these were the disciples that believed on him. You were of your father, the devil. That's pretty strong. You cannot ignore this. You cannot just, well, he was talking to the Jews back then. Okay, now listen, we're back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. We beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. Well, that sounds like he's telling us that we should believe in dispensations. But listen carefully. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away or an apostasy first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. You cannot hear, you cannot understand unless you understand that you are the man of sin and you are the son of perdition. And once he is revealed, then the end for all of time can come. Do you have any idea what I'm saying to you?
Funny how automatically your mind wants that to be, oh, there's the man of sin. There's the man of sin. And you place it at home.
Yeah, and the moment you do that, then you can't partake in what's coming. Now listen. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. You show yourself that you are God by judging for yourself good and evil. That's why the least studied scripture in evangelical Christianity is Matthew 23:15. It says, you shall travel over sea and land to make one convert, and when he is made, you shall make him twice the child of hell that you are. And the reason that is that you're talking to people who already are cursed, but now he tells them, now the way to get uncursed is you have to find all these other things that you think are good and evil. And you don't show anybody else. Everybody else thinks you're a fool. But in the privacy of your own temple, you convince yourself that you know all things. You got this great future, and you're special. Does that communicate to anybody? And the basis upon which that deception happens is the idea of need or zero, and that you have time. Time is what gives us the leaven of the Pharisees, the leaven of the Sadducees, and the leaven of Herod. The three leavens that you must remove from you in order that you can partake of the true Passover. Because he knew it wouldn't come unless they were told they were the Antichrist. Why? It's funny to me. When I first, this 30 years ago, when I first told somebody they were the Antichrist, man, boom! I can remember Gary Buckner's response. He just about went insane. First, I told him God didn't love him, and second, I told him he was the Antichrist. And he just about went ballistic. Now, in 30 years, I can tell people, I told a whole bunch of people the other day they were the Antichrist. They never heard it before. You know, that makes sense. No, I'm talking about people I never met before.
I know, but you got all the hard-headed ones in here. Anybody else not quite as hard, maybe?
Okay, let me just review these things. In 1000 A.D., in both India and Arabia, concept of zero was invented almost simultaneously as a manipulative tool. And once the concept of zero was invented, then negative numbers could exist. And it permitted technology and science to manipulate within these limited parameters. And if you understand calculus or algebra even, you understand that you have to have these negative numbers and you have to have zero in order to manipulate. And you have to believe, in all of science, has to believe that time, that time is linear and the speed of light is constant. Because what happens in Revelation 10 is when the seventh angel stands up and declares that the mystery of God is completed, time shall be no more, all of a sudden, the linearity of time disappears, and if without, the only thing that gives space dimension is time. And all of science now, we've talked about this so often, but no matter which discipline of science you go, whether it's cosmology or physics or chemistry or higher energy physics or any of them, you come, and what they found with the highest, most incredible tools is chaos. And chaos is the gap between spirit and senses. That's why no man could cross it. And how far is it? It's as far as the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles is from the eighth day. It's as far as the east is from the west. And the only way you'll understand it, and the only way you'll understand any of this, is to understand that you are the instead of Christ. And therefore you must die to self and stop using that which is cursed to gain that which is blessed. There's a million scriptures. Jesus said, Paul said, that Christ alone has immortality. He said that only that which proceeded from God can return to God. And I heard a comedian the other day say, if all of us are the sons of God or the children of God, what made Jesus so special? Are you starting here? It says it in Genesis. Let us create man in our image and our likeness. Image, the stellum, the container, and likeness, the exactness. The image was when he formed the dust and blew on it, and man became a living soul. But when Christ, the seed, the sperma of God, was shed on all flesh, then he became the life-giving spirit. And only that which originated from God, which came from eternity, can return to eternity. That's probably enough to think about. It'll destroy everything that you thought was right, if you understand what I've said this morning, so that you can live in 100% dependence on the Father and nothing else. This has staggering implications.
Every Sunday when we talk about, do the aftermath and talk about betraying him, I think about the somewhere it refers to Judas as a son of perdition. So it's like it's all tied together to see it.
Amen.
Can I cough now?
John?
This has huge, huge, huge implications. Nothing can stand this. We live in the world, but we're not of the world. We pick our spots, we pick our places. This reaction is of the world, because that's where I'm at this point in time. This reaction is of God, because that's where I'm at in this point in time. And that's really bullshit.
And we live in the belief system that we have chosen him. You can't choose him.
And the voice that I hear, my voice, is really a voice out of the dust. Peeps and mutters.
Yeah.
That's why all the... Do you understand why... I mean, you got to hear this. Do you understand why there are certain movies are scary and certain books are scary? Because they touch this. That's why you've got to hear once and for all time. By one offering, you've been perfected forever. Abandon yourself and live in his joy. Find out this joy unspeakable that can't be touched by anything that's of the senses. It can't be affected by it. You're not supposed to run around and have a good day and a bad day and a good day and a bad day. Well, the bad days are the good days, because the bad days to you are what's destroying the lie. That's why in Burke's article I was so thankful that he used that analogy of the gold and the quartz. I mean, because that's what life is. We are a hunk of quartz, and inside it contains everything that you could ever imagine or dream of, and a fulfillment of it beyond anything that you could ever... Eye has not seen, or ear heard, nor entered into the heart of man that which God hath prepared for them that wait on him. That don't faint and lean on their own arm of understanding every time something happens that they don't like. They don't get mad or upset at crazy things. I mean, it's you're of a different genus. You're a different species. We're no longer of the human race. All righty, I pray that you can apprehend or be apprehended by this.
I was saying this is the when it talks about there's none righteous, still not one. You're always looking out without the problem. There's no one of you that's righteous.
And the purpose of the law is to shut up your voices. That's why, it had to happen in the economy of the system. That's why the church divorced itself from the law, from Judaism, because they thought, well, that was the old God. Now we got a new God. That's just goofy. You know the law. That's why I studied it for all those years. I studied every jot and tittle of it. Looking for, this has become a cliche, but I really was looking for something that would show me that what I had seen was wrong. You can only understand, really, the depth of all these things by multiplying, by taking every thought to the end, by taking it all the way to the end of time and space. And you have to come up to this simple statement that truth cannot change with time or circumstance. And so if what you're listening to that you think is truth would be different in the circus of Rome or in the Sudan right today or in Indonesia in the midst of any... It can't be true. If it changes, it can't be true. And that's the mystery that Abraham found. And that's why he is the perfect Christian. He saw the day of Christ and was glad. Pray, please, please don't give sleep to your eyes or rest to your head until you find out the habitation for the Holy One of Israel. Until you find out that habitation is you. And that all of your thoughts and all of your ideas and all of your emotions are a mortal enemy of that truth. Then you will gladly abandon yourself. You will gladly pick up your cross. The cross is no more a burden. It's the tree of life. My guest that was here the other day that I've known for 30 some years, when I knew him, he was head of the Billy Graham movies stuff, and he said to me, he said, I didn't say anything, but he said, Well, Ollie, I'm certainly glad you got over that bitter period. I've never been bitter about the real. I've been bitter about feeling that somebody has hijacked the church. And then I figured out who hijacked the church was me and you. I didn't respond to him. All right, take it, big guy.